Link session number 16686, Reel 1.
Mr. Ashton, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Liverpool.
Which year was this?
1922.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a butler.
In Liverpool?
No.
Whereabouts?
In Cheshire somewhere, I'm not too sure.
Did you go to school in Liverpool?
Yes.
And how old were you when you left school?
14.
1936. Did you get a job?
Yes, butcher's boy.
What were you doing when war was declared?
I worked for Littlewood.
And how did you feel about Chamberlain's declaration of war on Germany?
Well, I was only young, it didn't bother me.
So you weren't dismayed about it?
No.
Did you take any steps to join the forces?
Yes, I volunteered.
For the Navy?
Firstly, for the Army, but I was too young. Then the Air Force, I was too young. But the Navy said, if you sign on for 7 years, we'll take it. So that's what I did.
Why did you decide to volunteer?
King and country, I suppose.
Patriotism?
Yes.
And where did you go to for your training?
Devonport.
Can you describe what it was like, please?
Well, it was a big barracks. All right, dump, actually. And went to signal school there.
What did you learn there?
Signals, Morse code and semaphore.
How were you treated by the people in charge during the training?
Oh, okay. The only people I didn't like were the physical training instructors.
Why was that?
They were just tough.
Was there any mistreatment? Or
No. They, I couldn't swim, so they took you to the baths and threw you in, you know. They had long poles to keep you out there. I thought, Richard, this is not for you, so I used to dodge it, you know. So I still can't swim.
How could you dodge it?
Make an excuse, going to the dentist or something like that, you know.
And when you finished your training, what were you qualified, what job were you qualified to do?
Signalman. Ordinary signalman.
Which was your first ship?
HMS Illustrious.
Can you describe going to the ship?
Yep, I was drafted on my own. And it was a new ship. Just trying to think where did I join. I think it was in Plymouth I joined her. Never seen an aircraft carrier in my life before. And I'm standing on the quayside, all by myself, looking up at this huge ship. So I went on board and got me a mess. Life started on board ship. We went out to Bermuda for trials. And I always remember that we were over the side swimming. Well, I was messing around in the water. And somebody shouted, "Octopus." We all dived back on board the ship. Anyway, then we left and went out into the Mediterranean fleet based at Alexandria. I think they called us Force H then, Admiral think it was Admiral Cunningham in command. Then we did the raid on Taranto.
What do you remember about that?
That was at night, and we were just at action stations. And all the old swordfish took off and sank most of the Italian fleet and flew back to us.
What did you see of the aeroplanes?
Just some taking off, because my action station was on the bridge.
So you could get a good view?
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a signalman, you always had a good view.
Did you see any damaged aircraft coming back?
No, there was none. I don't think we lost any aircraft. Later on, we as signalmen complained that we couldn't see the signals from the aircraft, from the observer on the aircraft. Bearing in mind the swordfishers open cockpits. So they said, well, if you're so clever, get up there yourself and see what it's like. So I went up in a swordfish from an airfield in Egypt and said to the pilot, haven't they got a parachute? Oh, we don't need one, he said. So we flew round and signaled the ship and came down again. A hairy experience.
Were you frightened?
Not really, I don't think so. I was young.
What kind of signals were they giving from the swordfish to you? With their hands?
Oh no, Aldous lamp. Aldous lamp. Can't even know what the signals would be.
Why couldn't you see the Aldous lamp signals?
Because they weren't doing it right, the observer.
What should they have been doing?
Well, they should have been hanging out the cockpit, really. And then the Germans weren't out in the Med then. Of course, the Italians used to bomb us, but they were pathetic, they dropped the bombs miles away, so we weren't and never worried. But then the Germans came into the Med with their Stuka dive bombers, and we were escorting a Malta convoy, and the lift on the carrier were down, so they just dive bombed us and dropped their bombs down our lifts. And that was the end of HMS Illustrious in action.
Where were you when the bombing took place?
On the bridge. It was always my action station.
What did you see of the incoming planes?
You could just watch them coming down, dive bombing it. All the guns are blazing and everything, all from all the fleet. But the target was HMS Illustrious. Anyway, we were on fire and listing. And we limped into Malta. And it was during the siege of Malta. Of course, we got bombed and bombed there. We were tied up in Valletta Harbour. And we were patched up. And we set sail to the Suez Canal, down to Durban.
When the German Air Force attacked the Illustrious, did you see anything of the casualties aboard the ship?
Oh, yeah.
What did you see of those?
Number one fellow with his head blown off. I saw worse ones on the Anzio. Anyway, we went through the sewers down to Durban. I had a wonderful time there. There were queuing up to take us out to dinner and whatnot. And we went down to Cape Town and had a good time there. Then we went over to Norfolk, Virginia, USA. I think we were the first ship to go under the they call it lease land. They weren't in the war then. And the Americans welcomed us greatly. They thought we were funny because we were in summer uniform, white tops and white shorts. So they thought it was funny the sailors wearing shorts. But they treated us very, very well. Couldn't do enough for us. And then I was drafted up to New York. It was Christmas time.
This must have been 41.
Yeah. And it was just before Christmas Eve one day. Went into Union Jack Club. We didn't have much money because they kind of halved our pay because of the dollar. Something like that. And they had lists of families wanting British sailors inviting us for Christmas. So I was with a Geordie friend who was old, who was baldy. Because I was only, what, 18 of them. So they said, come back Christmas Eve and somebody will be here to pick you up. So we went back. And this gorgeous girl came through the door. She was lovely. Her name was Kay, and she'd come for us too. She had this huge shooting break outside. Bearing in mind, I'd never been in a car before, I don't think. It was all wonderful. And they took us to their home in Brooklyn. They had a huge Christmas tree. They were very well off. Gave it a wonderful time. And I always remember Christmas morning, there was a present on the tree for us, 200 Camel cigarettes. I thought they were wonderful, because looking back, you know, we could have robbed them or whatever. Anyway, Kay and I got on very well. We were the same age. And through all the years, from then till now, we still write and telephone each other. And, 20 odd years ago, I took my wife and the youngest daughter to America to meet them. And we stayed with them. They lived in Vermont then. And she said I was the only British sailor to go back. I used to notice her mother pouring over the paper every morning. I thought, I don't know what she's doing. She was reading the stock market. There were millionaires, it turned out. And when we went back with my wife, her husband, Bud, he said to me, "You missed $1 million, Dick."
He said what?
"You missed $1 million, not Marina, you know." But there was no romance between us. We were just, I suppose I was too much of a gentleman at that time. But we still keep in contact. That's wonderful, isn't it, after all these years?
Yes.
They'd had a house, a home in Vermont, a summer home, but then they left Brooklyn and went up to Vermont.
So you were just in northeast USA waiting for another ship, were you?
Yeah, but wasn't long in coming. It was a US Coast Guard cutter
called,
the British name was HMS Galston.
Galston?
Yeah, it's on the east coast, isn't it?
Yes, it's a place near Yarmouth.
That's right, yeah. Very comfortable, very small. And I must admit, it was a bit scary crossing the Atlantic by yourself on one of them. You know, we had no escort or anything.
Was it a ship with armament?
Yeah, oh yeah.
What kind of armament did it
have? Only small.
And the Navy had taken it over from the Americans?
That's right, yeah. They took a lot of them over, I've discovered since. Very comfortable. Anyway, we just brought it over. And then we got drafted back to Devonport then.
So this was in early 42, presumably?
Yeah. I discovered a couple of years ago there's an association of all these people that served on the Coast Guard cutters. But I never bothered joining it. And then I think we had some leave, and then we went to commission HMS Onslow up in Greenock. And the dockers were on strike at the time. So they made us the ship's company of Onslow. It was on a Sunday. Marched through Glasgow to try and get them back to work, I suppose, I don't know. Anyway, we were going to the town hall, or whatever they call it in Scotland. And we thought, oh, I'll get a few drinks at the end of this, but all we got was a cup of tea.
What did the sailors think about the strike?
Well, it was nothing to do with us, you know. Just marched through it. It was a Sunday anyway, you couldn't do anything in Scotland.
How did the people react to you?
Oh, wedding? Fine. Yeah, cheering. I've got a picture somewhere or other, I don't know where it is.
Did you see anything of the dockers who were on strike?
Don't think so. And then the we went out to sea trials on HMS Onslow. Captain Armstrong, Royal Navy. Great fella.
Why was he so good?
Well, he was a... I found he was Pucker Royal Navy, you know. Four stripes. He had a big hoop nose. And at sea, he always wore a white donkey jacket. I was a wonderful fellow, I thought. Not everybody liked him, but I got on very well. But being a signalman, you were closer to the officers than most of the crew.
How did he compare with the captain of the Illustrious?
He was more flamboyant. Captain of the Illustrious was... what was his name? He became an admiral in the end. Can't remember his name. Boyd, Captain Boyd. Very nice chap, very quiet. Anyway, off we went to do our trials. Up and down the Measured Mile off the Isle of Arran and Tobermory and all around there. And, of course, Captain Armstrong was Captain D, in charge of the flotilla of old boat. Offa, Obdurate, Horribly. Can't remember all the names. Then we started going on the Atlantic and Russian convoys.
Which did you prefer, the Onslow or the Illustrious?
Oh, the Onslow.
Why?
Much smaller. The discipline, but there wasn't so much bull on it, you know.
What kind of bull had you objected to?
Church parades on the flight deck and all this, you know. They're very discipline was very tough in the Navy. No, and every Saturday the captain would come round and inspect your mess. Oh, we'll be tired if we found any dust or anything. And then came the New Year's Eve 1942, the Battle of the Barents Sea. The weather on Russian convoys was absolutely atrocious, and it was very, very cold. I still suffer with the cold now. I have big gas bills. And we didn't have any proper clothing. We just wore our overcoat with your oilskin over it. But later on, they brought out kapok suit, like a flying suit. Anyway, we're on this convoy. The weather was absolutely terrible. JW something, it was the number. Visibility was practically nil. As I remember it, suddenly out of the mist and the snow, this ship came and challenged it with the oldest lamp, but it veered away and never saw it again. Then on the port bow, this gunfire started. And we were in a battle. Captain Sherbrooke was the captain. It was his first trip. Totally different to Captain Armstrong.
In what way?
He was quiet and he was aloof, you know. Anyway, we it turned out it was a German heavy cruiser Hipper and the pocket battleship Lutzow. And we turned HMS Achates was laying a smoke screen, and we turned to make a torpedo attack on the Hipper. We turned away. We were firing our paltry little 4.7 guns. I think we had a couple of hits on the Hipper, but then she found our range and started hitting us. They blew most of the funnel away. The captain was wounded with flying shrapnel and lost his eye, so he was out of the game. So they made another destroyer, Captain D, and Lieutenant Commander Marchant took over the Onslow. The thick black smoke was pouring out of us, flames. All the guns were out of action. We were listing badly to starboard. We were out of the fight then. And the noise from the siren, which was broken by the shells, was absolutely deafening. Terrible experience, really. And there was lots of dead on board. And we finally made it to a little place called Vyanga in the Kola Inlet, just below Murmansk. And I don't know why I got involved. We were sewing the dead bodies up in the hammocks. You know. We were full of rum to do it. And I know the burials at sea. I think there was 40 killed, or thereabouts. And we got to Waianga, just a dump of a place. And I was unlucky. They picked me and my shipmate Tom Upton to go ashore to the signal station and stay there. Then the ship moved up to Mermanx for repairs. Well, we got to this signal station, which was a wooden hut full of Russian soldiers, and we had no gear with us at all, and we weren't made very welcome. I think we were there 3 weeks or a month. It was a nightmare. And we had to trudge up through the snow to a hospital to get something to eat. And there was a stove in the hut, so we used to, which the Russians didn't light, and we started chopping wood and used the newspaper to light a fire, and they went mad, the Russians, because they used their newspapers to roll their cigarettes in, tobacco in. So it was a very unpleasant experience. I was freezing cold, about 40 below. Very difficult to describe how cold it was. Anyway, one day HMS Onslow came steaming past, and we ran out onto the jetty waving and shouting. But then we went back to the hut and got onto the shore base at Pagliano, British shore base. And they said, well, make your way here, the Onslow's coming here. So we got a lift in a Russian speedboat, and finally got back aboard HMS Onslow, and we joined the convoy, came back to Scapa Flow.
Can I just go back and ask you one or two questions about what you've said during the battle? Were you near the captain when he got hit?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're close as you are, because there's not much room on a bridge or a destroyer, and it's open, you know, so you're open to all the elements.
How is it he got hit and you weren't, if you were so close together?
Just luck. I mean, there's all kind of shrapnel and bits and pieces blown about. He was the only one that got hit on the bridge. He was just unlucky. Well, he got the Victoria Cross for his trouble.
How frightening was it on the bridge during the battle?
Very frightening. Really. But I was fortunate in that I was young. I had no ties, I wasn't married, no girlfriend or anything. I've always thought it must have been awful for the married men. But I was fancy